If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
We've been touting Nugs.net for a while, but for those of you who don't know, Nugs.net is the destination for live music on demand. They have a growing collection of over 15,000 full-length concert recordings from bands like Umphrey's McGee, Green Sky Bluegrass, and Spafford, so you'll never run out of live music to explore. You can listen to a show from last night or from 40 years ago. You can hear our favorite picks every Wednesday on Live 5, powered by Nugs.net on this very podcast. It's available on desktop, iOS, and Android apps, Sonos, and BlueOS. Just like us, the folks at Nugs.net are live music fans, so they're offering new subscribers a 35% discount on an annual subscription. Go to nugs.net/thesound and sign up today. If you already have a subscription, give the gift of live music to a friend. There's nothing better. Again, nugs.net/thesound for 35% off an annual subscription. The show starts now.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Reckless Heart, the title track from Joanne Shaw Taylor's latest release from earlier this winter. The album, her sixth in just a few years of recording, was produced in Detroit, Michigan, a bit of a haul from Black Country in England, where she grew up and indeed fell in love with the very native blues of that area, and of course, soul music. So it should come as no surprise that this latest release is packed full of great blues licks, but absolutely soulful vocals which pop out of your headphones or speakers as you listen. We recently caught up with Joanne as she gets set to do a heavy dose of the festival circuit, both here and abroad. Our conversation started when I asked Joanne about her inspiration to pick up and play a guitar, let alone have a career in music.
I mean, I think I kind of am a product of my influences. And I mean, I grew up in an area called the Black Country in the UK, which is kind of, I kind of describe it as the Detroit of England. You know, it's kind of a very industrial, working class town, and a lot of great music came out of there. Zeppelin, you know, Deep Purple, Sabbath, and stuff. So I kind of grew up with that stuff. My dad was a guitarist, big into blues, and particularly like classic rock and the British blues boom, you know. So I just grew up with his record collection, and also my mother's, who was, she was a dancer and just had a huge love for like Northern Soul and Motown and any kind of soul music, really. So that's kind of what I grew up with, and it's kind of stuck with me, really, you know. And I think Reckless Heart, one of the main reasons I'm so pleased of it is, I really think it's kind of a combination of that, you know, which I try hard to be. You know, I'm a blues guitarist, but I also kind of say I consider myself a soul singer, and, you know, and I play rock songs. So it's kind of like a really good combination of those three. And I think the album kind of really shows that, I hope.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I mean, from the vocal stylings, you know, I think of Aretha or Mavis Staples when I listen to the record.
You're my new best friend.
Really? Well, I'll move to Detroit. So you're based now in Detroit, right? I mean, you mm-hmm. made the jump across the pond. How long ago did you make the jump across the pond?
It will be 10 years next month.
Wow.
I came over 2000. Yeah, we were touring behind White Sugar, my first album. And I just loved the place and had a load of friends, made a load of friends here. And we were kind of rooting all the tours out of Detroit, and you know, I was a broke musician and it was kind of cheap, so all the ducks kind of lined up in a row, I guess.
Speaking of friends, Al Sutton produced this record. He of Greta Van Fleet and, dare we say, Kid Rock fame.
you can.
yeah. How did you first meet Al, and how did you convince him to produce this record, Reckless Heart?
I actually met Al the first day I was in Detroit. My bass player took me over to the studio. I think we were borrowing something. And he was there and said hi, and just kind of got to know him over the, you know, 10 years. And, you know, we're all kind of in the same social circle. So I see him a lot as a friend, you know, family barbecues and all that kind of stuff. And it was actually him. He kind of, I was always interested in doing an album with him, but if you've met Al, he's kind of scary, and I was never going to, you know, ask him to do it. but he's kind of approached me, you know, some years ago, you know, and said he'd love to do one, and or more in his way. He's like, your album's not live enough. You should be more live. I'm going to record a raw album with you. It's like, all right. But yeah, it just worked out perfectly for this timing. I was actually meant to do this album with Kevin Shirley. But I didn't sign to, the contract didn't get sorted with Sony in time. So we kind of missed our slot to record. And it was kind of a case of, all right, do we do it in 2 years or do I just do a different album now? And then, you know, I was kind of thinking of guys, and the obvious choice for me was Al, which at the time, to be honest, it worked out well because the sort of stuff I'd been writing and wanting to do was more in his kind of category, kind of a splash of classic rock mixed with, you know, Detroit soul kind of stuff. So right. it kind of just, timing was perfect on it, really.
It is the album of first. It's the first album made in Detroit. It's the first album produced by Al Sutton. And it's the first album, and I guess this is Al's influence, as you said, recorded mostly live, right? Like live off the floor.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you can kind of tell, like, there's, you know, we had to overdub bits here and there, but predominantly all of the guitar solos and the guitars are alive. Obviously there's a few tracks like Break My Heart Anyway where it's acoustic and kind of a bit more arranged, but predominantly, yeah, it's all done live.
Does that give you an opportunity to really get into the lyrics? I mean, I know that you write all your own music. Does the live venue when you're recording live, does it give you a chance to get more into what you're saying because you know that this could be the take and I have to be as passionate about the song that I'm singing as the playing that I'm doing?
Well, we actually overdubbed.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No. Just because from a recording standpoint, we couldn't, you know, there'd be too much bleed from the drums. And
right. So
it's kind of, you know, when you pick that, you either go, right, we're going to record the guitar live and I'm in there with the band, or are we going to, you know, record the vocals live and have me in a separate vocal booth? So hence we kind of, my choice was to do guitars live, which I think really paid off when you hear like the solo on I've Been Loving You Too Long.
Yes.
You know, that kind of slow blues and the way it builds with Ron, because I'm sitting directly opposite him, you know, and he's kind of, I'm improvising and he's going with me. You know, I think you only get that in a live situation. But yeah, there was a bit of pressure on the guitar for that reason, you know, when realizing that, you know, I'm also trying to lead a band through these songs that I've written that they've never heard before. Plus, you know, I know these are going to be, one of these is going to be the final guitar take, you know, so there's a bit of pressure.
There are a few songs that were written based on a split. Love always seems to get in the way, but always inspires.
I listen to too much Amy Winehouse and Adele. That's
well, that's not a bad thing. But also, love as a theme does come up. And, you know, after a split, for good or for bad, there's a chance to put pen to paper and write probably some of the most heartfelt songs. Bad Love and In the Mood, I think, were written sort of in that period, right?
Yeah, they all were, really. So, yeah, basically, I mean, we're still together, but we just kind of hit a bump in the road and we're kind of... I'm trying not to quote Friends and do the, we were on a break thing. But yeah, so I mean, everything was written in that period, which was, you know, kind of great for me to have that outlet, you know, because I realized not a lot of girls going through what I'm going through get that outlet, you know, they just have to go through it and go about their lives and don't get to express themselves in that way and kind of breathe through it or whatever. So yeah, that was, you know, kind of a, you know, I realized how lucky I am to have that. And it's certainly, I think, therefore, makes the lyrics more, you know, meaningful and emotional, I guess. Certainly the performance when you really feel it, you know.
Well, I'm Only Lonely is just a gorgeous song, and it's probably not a song that, you know, you would immediately point to. But I think what I like about it is it does speak to that heartache and trying to figure out life with somebody else. So I totally get it. and it's true, you know, most people don't, you know, is it cathartic for you to, you know, open a spiral notebook or however you write, and sit down and write some of this stuff out? It gives you a chance to probably think about, where you are in the relationship too. Most people have to pay somebody like a psychologist or a psychiatrist
exactly.
to talk this stuff
it's
through.
Free therapy is what I always say. You know, definitely. I mean, it's, and as you just said, it does give you a chance to sit down and go, okay, these are the things I'm angry about, and I'm going to write those songs and have those feelings. But, you know, if I say out loud, we're just going to keep arguing, you know. These are the things I'm going to miss. These are the things I'm sad about, you know. And these are the things I love about you, you know. So it does give you a chance to kind of, I guess, go through that, you know. And again, I fell in love with those kind of singers, the females that really kind of wore their hearts on their sleeves, you know,
right.
So I'm just kind of trained in that.
I guess what separates you from an Amy Winehouse or an Adele is that you actually have this instrument that you have to play at the same time while going through this therapy over and over again on stage. I mean, is that is that tricky for you? Because, you know, your voice is another instrument and such an important instrument to your sound. Is that tricky for you to be able to play the way you do and sing the way you do? Is that a tricky kind of thing to fix?
It can be sometimes, but I think that also, you know, one, I'm pretty well practiced at it now, you mm-hmm. know, so it's kind of like an extension of myself, you know, it's, you know, it's kind of like driving a car. You know, it takes you a minute to figure out how to change gears when you're learning. But, you know, now 10 years later, it's kind of autopilot. But, yeah, I think it comes into more in the writing. You know, it's very beneficial to sit down with a guitar and write the lyrics with it, because then, I know what the chances are of me being able to sing that melody over, you know, a complicated guitar line.
Right.
The only one I didn't do that with was New 89, which is called New 89 because I wanted something more up-tempo, and it was the 89th demo recording that I sent to Al, because I was just sitting with a guitar on my iPhone. And I still hadn't written any lyrics. And we were going to ditch it off the album, actually. Or he basically threatened me and said, if you don't have any lyrics by tomorrow, we're axing this song. So I went home and wrote some very quickly, which that was a challenge to sing and play that when it came to the live tour, because the two didn't necessarily go with each other. It was kind of like tapping your head and burping your stomach at the same time.
Yeah.
So that took a good sort of couple of weeks of going, oh crap, I really should have written these while I wrote the music, but it worked out good in the end.
Well, I'm curious about that. You wrote 89 demos. Are those snippets? Are those full songs? How much time went into writing 89 pieces of music
that was the 89th recording of that one song.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so that's the, you know, it's one of those things where sometimes you write a song like Creeping. I wrote in like an hour, if that, you know. Wow. It took me an hour to write it, sing it, get it nailed, play and sing it at the same time, and record it and send it.
Wow.
New 89 took 89 times of me practicing the riff and trying to build it and, you know, figure it all out. So right. It's like, it's one of those weird ones. Some of them fight you and some of them just kind of come naturally. But it took about a month, a good solid month to write the album, I think, I'd say.
Before we get to the rest of our conversation on the Sound Podcast, I wanted to remind you about a pretty cool deal the folks at Nugs.net are offering. If you sign up today as a new subscriber, you'll get a 35% discount on an annual subscription. All you have to do is go to Nugs.net/The Sound and sign up today. Now, back to our conversation. I'm curious about, let me unpack this a little bit further. So when you're going through it, I'd give up at like 50.
I had a ginormous blood blister on my finger, and that's why I stopped.
Right. Wow. That's amazing. And so did you send him all of them, or did you just send him the 89th take and said, you know, this is it. What do you think?
Yeah, I pretty much just said, I've written this. If you're not happy with it, I don't care. I'm done. And I think he was confused about it. He's like, all right. He's like, yeah, that sounds good. We'll add it to the pile. I'm like, are you kidding me? I've been sitting here for 3 days doing the same riff, trying to figure it out. And it was a weird part because it sounds like I'm sliding, like using a slide, but nice. I actually can't play slide.
Uh-huh.
So I was literally just sliding my finger up the neck of the guitar from the second to the 17th fret, which is hence the blood blister, because it just,
yes,
you know, repeatedly rubbing your finger over frets. Not a good idea, I found out.
Yeah, don't do that. Maybe you should learn how to play slide so that doesn't happen again.
I'll work on it.
You know a few people, I'm sure, at this point that could probably teach you some tricks on how to play slide.
I've asked a few friends, you know, and then, like, I asked Bonamassa, and everyone always says yes, and then nothing.
I wonder if it's because it's mostly feel and it's not something you can necessarily teach.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my hesitance to learn slide is that I always view it as just a different instrument. Mm-hmm. You know, if you do it and do it well, you know, you, like a Derek Trucks or a, you know, Dwayne, it's its own voice. Right. So it's kind of opening another can of worms for myself, because I don't want to do it in half effort, you know, and just...
Right.
Play a little bit. So eventually maybe they'll give me actually a few months off and I can sit down and look at it.
Jake's Boogie closes the record. It's Unplugged. It is the song that is, well, imperfect but perfect, I think, at the same time.
Thanks.
And it's recorded entirely live, from what I understand. It's just you and a guitar, right?
Yeah, it was the last song we did. I've never done anything like that, you know, and like, you know, I grew up with all that Big Bill Broonzy kind of stuff and country blues, and I don't play slides, so I'm not great at it, but mm-hmm. I finally kind of had the confidence that I thought, you know, I've got this riff, I like the lyrics, let's just do it. And we did two takes, and I was a bit too nervous, and I kept fluffing it. And it was the last song we were recording. It was just me and Al in the studio at that point. And he just said, right, enough, and took me to a bar and gave me two vodka tonics and then went, right, we're recording it again now. So we went in and did it again once I was a little more relaxed. And as you said, it was imperfect, but it was like, you know, we were going for a vibe. Right. You know, we were both thought it had a cool vibe. And there's actually a train ran by because Ross Belt's on a train track.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to ask the middle. About that.
Yeah, so you can kind of hear that if you're listening closely. And it just kind of felt like the best take, you know, it's the most honest.
The session musicians on this record, I think, play a large part in the sound of the record. Not to say that you don't stand out, but there are players.
Agreed.
And given that you're in Detroit, I mean, you're amongst Motown's greatest players. What was it like to play with some of these veterans in the studio, and what kind of an experience was that for you?
I mean, I don't want to be too cheesy and say dream come true, but from the first minute, it really was. It was, you know, it was clear I was the least capable musician in the room, which was fantastic. You know, that's what you want. But yeah, particularly sitting down with, because we kind of did keyboards over the top, you know, so it was predominantly just me in the rhythm section, which was Ron Otis on drums and James Simonson on bass, which Ron plays with Aretha and had done until she passed away for about 15 years. Uh-huh. And James is Betty LaVette's MD. So, you know, you're talking two guys that are very capable at handling, you know, strong female leaders of the band kind of thing.
Right.
But yeah, as soon as they started playing, I can't remember what we cut first. I wish I could. I think it might have been In the Mood. It was pretty obvious that, you know, there was a vibe there between the three of us, and they were perfect for it. And actually, Ron came and joined me. He's doing some shows with me over the summer.
Oh, great.
So I got to play with him on Saturday. And as soon as he just started playing, like, The Best Thing or some of the stuff off the album, you know, my keyboard player said he could see me smiling, even though he could only see the back of my head.
You do have this raspy soul voice, and I'm curious about the quitting of smoking, which is congratulations for doing that. That's great.
Thank you.
Huge.
Have you ever smoked?
Yes. And so I totally understand. Know. And I actually attribute my own voice to much of that terrible
thing. Yeah, it's hard for it not to change it a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
But I'm curious about that. I'm curious about... Are you nervous, or do you think your voice has gotten even that much better since you've quit smoking?
It's definitely gotten better. I've got back some vocal range that was lost.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I was at that point where, which I won't lie, I was a heavy smoker from 17 till I quit last year, which was a very stupid thing to do, given I had whooping cough as a child, and I get bronchial infections very easily, so I have to be careful on the road, like touring in winter and, you know, meeting too many people. So it was a pretty stupid thing to be doing. But I kind of felt like I got to the point where I lost my voice, I think, early last year or the year before, and it really scared me, and I went and checked it out. And I got very lucky that there was nothing wrong with my throat whatsoever. I was just tired, you know, and talking too much and gigging too much, basically. So it kind of felt like that time of, okay, I've done this for so long, it has affected my voice, and unfortunately, I will say, in a good way. It has deepened it, and there's a bit of rasp there that wasn't there before, but if I quit now, you know, I'm avoiding any future problems. And it's been good. It's a lot stronger. I still sing pretty harshly. We had Herschel Boone produce the vocals on this album and coach me.
Mm-hmm.
And as he said, unfortunately, I have that sort of voice where, because I sing so hard, you know, two gigs in a row is about all I can do if I want to sing, you know, sound good and not wear myself out. That's just the tone of my voice and what I'm going for. So, yes. No, I think it has benefited. It is stronger. And as I say, there's some range back. So that's been nice.
Plus, you're healthier, so that's a bonus too.
Plus, yeah, it is kind of, well, you know, if you've smoked, it's weird when you spend 20 years waking up and your first two meals are cigarettes and coffee.
Right.
You know, now I have fruit and I can actually breathe and exercise.
Let's talk about touring, because you have some cool gigs coming up. You're playing the Lysla del Blues Festival. You're going back to Reading for Sub 89. festivals are a big part, I guess, now of what you're about and what you're doing, at least for the summer, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Is that exciting for you to be able to not only play these festivals, but take in some of the artists that are at these gigs?
Yeah, definitely. I've always looked forward to festival season. So, you know, late May to August, September. Uh-huh. It kind of breaks up the touring. You know, we went out at the beginning of the year and did like 3 months heavy through all of Europe and then the States. And we'll probably usually do that at the later end of the year as well.
Right.
So it's kind of nice to have that little breakup where, you know, you can just kind of fly out and do a couple and be home for a few days. Kind of, you know, keeps you on the road but breaks up the heavy touring. But as you said, also because it's the only chance I get to see other people play, really, you know, because I'm so busy most of the time myself and I get to go out. So, yeah, it's great to see, you know, there's a few coming up with Marcus King, who's a good friend of mine. Obviously, the Joe Bonamassa Cruise, I get to see Joe and everyone on that. So it's, yeah, it's kind of like a busman's holiday, as we say in the UK.
Are there any particular festivals that you're looking forward to more than others, or is it, you know, it's hard to have a favorite child at this point?
Yeah, there is, to be honest, though. Just because there's some I've always wanted to do that I've never done, so the Peach Fest.
Yes.
That's going to be good. I don't have the gig list in front of me, so I'm going off the top of my head. I know Telluride we've got,
yep,
which I don't get to spend much time in Colorado, so that'll be beautiful.
Those are the two big ones.
Those are the ones I'm remembering because I don't look at the tour schedule too often. I just get in the car when they tell me to.
You're doing support for the Almond Betts Band a couple of dates, which is amazing.
Yep.
Some support for Government Mule in Kansas City at the Crossroads. So there's lots of really exciting times ahead. That's great. Are you already thinking? I know that this record came out earlier in the year. Are you already thinking about writing new music, or is this something that you're doing on an ongoing basis? How does that work for you?
Yeah, I usually don't write unless I kind of have to, you know, like there's an album coming up. I like to kind of put it to the side. But that said, this year, I think we won't record again until next year, but I'm thinking of a little break to go down to Nashville and just kind of see James House and some other guys down there and just kind of get, you know, maybe a few things in the back pocket just so I got them, you know, and right. I think that'll be fun anyway, you know.
Well, congratulations, and it's I'm sorry we've taken this long to get to you and Reckless Heart.
But, no worries.
I'm glad we have, and it's an amazing record, good luck.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you very much.
Joanne Shaw Taylor is simply outstanding. Reckless Heart is a fabulous record, one that I would encourage you to listen to. This young lady is musically mature well beyond her years, and you will absolutely dig the songs and fall in love with her voice. For more on Joanne Shaw Taylor, including tour dates, videos, and more, visit joanneshawtaylor.com. Before we leave you, have a listen to another track off of Reckless Heart. Here is The Best Thing.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening. Osiris.